On the first pages of a new book about the Vietnam War and the Secretary of Defense for many of those years, there is a photograph of a pensive Robert McNamara and these words.
Many years after, you would spy him now and then on the street, a narrow figure in a tan trench coat hurrying down Connecticut Avenue or across Farragut Square or through the park that cuts in front of the White House. You would see him and start. My God, it's McNamara. The body was still lean and fit, remarkably so, but the face had now aged almost terrifyingly, as if meant to be a window on what lay heaped within. He was a ghost of all that had passed and rolled on beneath his country in barely a generation.
Paul Hendrickson, reading from the opening of his book, The Living and the Dead, Robert McNamara, and Five Lives of a Lost War. Hendrickson tells the story of a young man, an artist who tried to kill McNamara one night in 1972, tried to throw him off the ferry going to Martha's Vineyard. The author writes about a Vietnamese family, about an American nurse. He visits a former Marine whose picture in Grief had been in Life magazine. He meets the daughter of a man who 20 years ago had burned himself to death outside the Pentagon, outside Robert McNamara's office. But mostly Paul Hendrickson, working from 12 years of research, writes about Robert S. McNamara. He was from an Irish family in Oakland. He graduates from the Harvard Business School, falls under the spell of control accounting, using numbers not as historical record, but as a tool for making decisions. He uses that skill briefly in the Second World War, helping keep track of airplanes and bombs, then 15 years at Ford Motor Company, really working the numbers. Then he's 44 years old, 28 days into the presidency of Ford, making $500,000, when the brand-new Kennedy administration calls. McNamara will join the bright young talent called to Washington and the new frontier. As Paul Hendrickson tells it, Robert McNamara is offered two jobs. The first is Secretary of the Treasury.
Treasury wasn't big enough. Treasury wasn't powerful enough. He could do more setting interest rates by running Ford Motor Company than he could becoming a cabinet member whose job is Treasury. No, he wanted a bigger fish, and he shortly got that. And what was the Kennedy administration looking for? Almost a secular priesthood. They wanted clean, swift lines. And here is this guy who has just streaked to the top of Ford Motor Company, just a few months older than the president-elect. He's the god from Michigan. We all want a deus ex machina from the wings who will solve our problems.
And he wanted his picture on the cover, and indeed the Kennedys wanted his picture on the cover of Newsweek magazine right away.
And they got it.
Yeah. And he rode to Washington on this sort of this rocket of control accounting, and there's the Pentagon to be managed, the biggest business in the world. It does make a great deal of sense to have him in this job.
And it absolutely does. I'm very glad you said that, because in truth, who could have known anything about Vietnam? It was the most distant blip on the radar screen. And the immediate job of systematizing the mammoth Pentagon, ordering that place, was perfect for what he could do. It's just that something called Vietnam eventually came along, and Ho Chi Minh never went to the Harvard Business School.
You write, in 1967, this is indicative of the way he continued to operate, this is the Pentagon briefing McNamara, something to do about the bombing in the North in relation to the total air operations. You quote him as saying, so it is 15% of 10% of 13/30ths that have been in dispute. In this
do
situation.
You believe that? That was in September of 1967, when the world was certainly coming apart for Robert McNamara, but there were moments when he could resummon and refind that kind of energy to make that kind of unfathomable statement. I'm still, these years later, and I have that in a document form because I got the actual transcripts of that Pentagon press conference in which he says those exact words. What does it mean? I'm still looking at that sentence, trying to figure out what 13/30ths of 15/20ths of 16/80ths means.
Was he doing a good job running the Pentagon, though? Just from that side of the Potomac River.
I would say that probably no previous Secretary of Defense did it better in terms of streamlining and organizing the operation, and indeed bringing the doctrines of control accounting and budget planning and five-year program packaging, planning, budgeting, operations, and making the service heads and service secretaries knuckle under to those kinds of disciplines, which were the same kind of disciplines he demanded of what you might call the fruits and nuts department at the Ford Motor Company, which is to say the designers, the creative egos in their Argyle socks who just want to design a flashy car. And he, standing there on a Friday afternoon or a Thursday afternoon in those years at what is called the show, can recite what the cost of a taillight on a Ford car cost 10 years earlier.
The show is where everybody has their design ideas
on what a new car might be.
Right.
In the three-year process in which you make a car. And nobody could stand up to his kind of tabbing on his fingers, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, taillight here, this, we can save a nickel under here.
Yeah. Let me keep you there with the Ford Motor Company, though, because I'm curious about this sort of analogy. You say in the book that he wasn't a real car guy, that the real car guys in Michigan, they didn't go to college. They just knew about cars. They worked on 90% emotion and intuition. The rest was logic. And he wasn't a real car guy. If he had been a real military guy in the Pentagon, would things have turned out differently?
That's exactly the story. I mean, maybe a real car guy could have got us out of Vietnam faster. If one of these guys who had never gone to college but worked on a certain amount of instinct and intuition and understanding what people are about and the irrational ways in which people behave and are suddenly impulsed on a Friday night with their sweetheart wife beside them to buy a new car, which is not what the McNamarian disciplined way of thinking would want you to do. No, if somebody's going to buy a car, he will have checked out 18 cars over the past 2 weeks. So, yes, if he had been a real military guy, perhaps he would have had, and I think this is the bottom line of what we're talking about, a deeper appreciation for the irrationality, the folly, the capriciousness, and sometimes the total unpredictability of human nature, things that numbers can't order.
But speaking about control accounting, this really has to do with arithmetic. A Marine general comes to McNamara in Honolulu with a 17-page memo. This is Victor Krulak, and he's done the arithmetic. He says the North Vietnam has a military manpower pool of 2.5 million men. Assuming a kill ratio of 2.5 enemy for one American or South Vietnamese soldier, it would cost 175,000 lives to reduce enemy manpower by only 20%. Attrition is not going to work. They've already figured out that bombing is not going to work in that sort of situation.
That has to be a devastating moment. You know, Victor Krulak, who was not the top Marine, he was about the third Marine at that point, but he was in charge of all fleet operations in the Pacific and oversaw the operations in Vietnam. Krulak brings these figures to McNamara in a special private meeting at the Pentagon in January 66. And McNamara has already made a turn against the war that he has just escalated in the previous few months. He has built up the war. We've sent in thousands and thousands of American men. We have 175,000 American men going in at that point. It's now January 1966. America has taken over the war. The big war has begun. And Krulak, who is the original military mind in piercing the darkness that attrition won't work, that the land war is bankrupt before it begins, comes to Secretary McNamara, whom he had a good relationship with, presents these numbers. McNamara must have understood them instantly, because he was arriving there himself, of course, in his own conclusions. But he didn't resign. He stayed in. He kept on as Secretary of Defense for another 2 years.
Do you fault McNamara more for his actions or inactions in office, or for the fact that after coming to a conclusion about the future of the war, he continued, he didn't resign then, and then after he did, he was forced out or quit? He didn't say anything about the war.
That's an acute question, Noah. Which is worse? David Halberstam speaks of the crime of silence, and I myself see it that way in terms of two prongs. The first prong in the crime of silence is you have come to the shattering conclusion that the war cannot be won militarily, and you keep sending young boys into the tall elephant grass. Never mind that, yes, within the councils of power, you are making sometimes, and with zigzag and riddle, earnest efforts to change the war direction that you have pointed the country in and to cap your fatal mistakes. He was doing that. The internal documents show that. But it also, unfortunately, those internal documents show that he's full of zigzag and riddle, and that other times he completely agrees with the president. And the bottom line is he signs on to the next round of escalations. He doesn't resign. But now I'm going to very quickly answer the second prong of that question, which is worse. You're the Secretary of Defense. You've come to this shattering conclusion, and you stay in anyway. But then finally, you leave office 2 years later. Whether you're fired or whether you quit, it's a muddy combination of the two. Then what happens? The war continues. The war continues to 1975. You've got another 7 years of war, and you don't speak out. Robert McNamara became president of the World Bank. He never spoke out. And only, Noah, decades later, do you come out with your own book in which you say, we were wrong. We were wrong.
You talked to Robert McNamara one time and asked him if he had ever been to the Vietnam Memorial here in Washington, ever seen that wall, the names on the wall. What did he say?
He said yes. And that was the only answer. And I said something clunky like, well, what was it like? And his fingers came up in front of his eyes as if to interpose them between himself and the world. And he said, I don't want to talk about it. That's Vietnam.
Paul Hendrickson, his book is titled The Living and the Dead, Robert McNamara, and Five Lives of a Lost War.